Welcome to She's the Phoenix with Natasha Lynn. I am your host,
Natasha Lynn,
and it is so good to be back. Y'all, it's been a few weeks since I've been recording, which is like good and bad. This week we are going to dive right into what we're talking about, and that is ways that I healed, grew, and found inspiration while I was going through heavy grief. And I say heavy grief because I feel like the grief is different now. It's not less or, easier. It is just different. So in the beginning of grief, my grief journey, it was all about grief. That's all it was. That's all that could take up space was just this loss, this profound loss. It just took over every aspect of my life. Like, there was nothing that I could do that didn't turn back into being, and I lost my husband, or, and my dad's dead. Okay. So, got an itch. Sorry guys. In the beginning, obviously, it was a lot different. And, like, this is the other thing. I want to talk about a few things that, like, to normalize that people don't really realize when you're grieving. So, like, where'd we go? Okay. Oh, I think we're back. So, when you're first grieving, okay. I totally just lost my whole train of thought. when you're like first grieving, there's a lot of things that happen. Okay. Obviously, because like mentally you're just not there. You're not sound. You're not feeling okay. And then there's the whole idea of like the physical changes that are going to happen to your body. And, like the brain fog and the depression and the anxiety and, you know, the list goes on top of just like, you know, those are like the physical, emotional ailments, not even talking about like, you know, you have to continue to pay bills and go to work and do all these things, you know, and just figure out how to grieve all at the same time. And I think that a lot of people just don't realize like the emotional toll that it takes. And and not that I'm going to compare grief to, like an abusive relationship, but in a sense you grieve that relationship. If just follow me here. Okay. So you have to grieve every relationship that you exit, you grieve regardless if you think you do or not. You do. There's a grieving period. You know, obviously it can be quite different than grieving somebody who has actually passed away versus somebody who's just not presently in your life anymore. But you still go through the similar phases and you also go through the same emotional, mental, and physical, difficulties. Okay. So like with my husband, my late husband, I, lost, like I had just had a baby. And then, you know, I was smaller before I had my son. And then after I had my son, I was smaller than I had been in years. I was just so small, but I was like starving myself small, but it wasn't like intentional starving myself. I just did not have any oomph to eat. And like everything that I ate was just like, you know, fully nutritional value as much as it could be. It, as minimal as it could be, but enough that my son would get whatever vitamins and nutrients that he needed because I breastfed. So, and that, you know, in itself just can make you lose a ton of weight too. And, but when my dad passed, I was like, I starved myself. It's like what it felt like, you know, but it wasn't really what I did intentionally. It just kind of happened that way with when my husband passed. But when my dad passed, I looked at my mom and I remember saying, like, we are eating this time. Like, we're not doing what we did last time. We're eating. And we did. And and we gained a bunch of weight. And then we were the heaviest, me and her, heaviest that we had ever been. I was heavier. Actually, I still am right now. Heavier than I was when I was 9 months pregnant with my son. Which is crazy, you know. But, like, these are just things that, like, that are just part of grief. You know, like the foggy brain, not being able to remember anything, having short-term memory loss, long-term, you know, memories being very blurry, disassociating, that's like a huge thing too, just like not even really being present because you're trying to distance yourself from the pain that you're feeling. There's just so many different things that I feel like sometimes just get like disregarded, you know, and in any grieving relationship, you know, that you there's so much more to it than just like somebody's dead or, you know, this that you broke up. Because the depth of the relationship is so much more than just the surface idea of somebody's gone. Yeah. I feel like with my husband, I couldn't think clear. I struggled to just like, you know, just get up and like move because the depression was so heavy. And my anxiety was through the roof about my son. I was so scared all the time that something was going to happen to him. I couldn't leave him alone barely, you know? And then that really wasn't like a whole option anyways, because I didn't get a whole lot of support from my family because my family was grieving. And sometimes it's really hard too, because, you know, like, I know many women who were pregnant or just had a brand new baby and their spouse died, and they didn't have that support. So not only are you grieving this wildly, if not the worst loss that you can experience, I believe I read actually that losing your spouse is like the number one most like worst thing that can happen, because it changes everything. And like, whether you, and this is the other thing, and people are so like just ew about this, but like, you have to realize that when one spouse dies, like the financial dynamic changes completely in somebody's life. Literally, 1 minute everything is one way, and the next minute it can never be that way again. And now they're not only just trying to accept and come to terms with the idea that their person is gone, they have to try and figure out how they're going to manage all of these bills. And some of them weren't the ones who did the bills. And they have to figure out how they're going to have all these cars. And then they have to pick, you know, they have to decide if they're going to cremate their loved one, if they're going to bury their loved one. They're going to have to pay for a funeral. They're going to have to pay for the after party of the funeral. And I hate saying the after party, but you know, that's really what it is. There's just like a lot that goes into it. And then everything changes, you know. They're the sole parent. There's just, and then it's like, it, you know, people just move on, and in 2 weeks, everybody's still sad, but not really like saying much. But like, our whole world changed, you know. Like, I was buying a business, and I had plans. I had this whole idea of how my life was going to lay out. And then all of a sudden I was like, well, what? I mean, like, I had to take in the fact that literally not just my husband, but everything about the security of my future was gone. It wasn't there anymore. And I think that a lot of people just don't realize that. Like, they just see the loss, and then they're just like, oh, well, you know, life happens. And not like, oh, well, you know, like, people do feel significantly bad, and, you know, you share that, but it's so much more than that. And until you go through it, you really don't understand the depth of, like, how heavy the loss really truly is. You know, in different aspects from losing your parents and the dynamic you had with your parents and how much you financially or didn't financially help, or, you know, all of those things, or which parent was a provider. There's just so much that goes into that. And, you know, it is also extremely stressful. It is incredibly difficult. And then that's if you just have like parents that had like a healthy relationship, not even the dynamic of all of the other things that can be happening inside of a marriage when, you know, one of them, when a parent dies. there's just so much. And I think that a lot of times it kind of just gets wrapped up into like, oh, they're grieving. And once again, you know, I don't mean that in some rude way. Like people are like, oh, they're grieving. But the depth and the understanding and the compassion and the realizing that like 1 year, well, people are like, oh, it's been a year or it's been 5 years. Like, to be honest, while I'm recording this right now today, it would be my 5 year anniversary married, to my late husband. And this day is always so like emotional for me because, you know, I didn't even get the first anniversary with him. And that's hard. Like, so every single anniversary I've been without him and it hurts. And I think of like, wow, 5 years of marriage with you. What would that have been like? Like, where would we be? What would we be doing? Would we have more kids? Like, how would we be celebrating? Would we still be doing the crazy old things that we used to do, you know? Or would we be totally different people? Because it's hard to imagine us being any different than we were. But I'm, you know, I'm 5 years older now. So I don't even know, you know, who we would be anymore. Which is such a crazy concept, too, is thinking about the idea that, you know, you don't even know what your person would be like now. Because you'd like to think that they're going to be the same person or they're going to have the same attributes. But that's crazy to think because are you the same person? Even if they were still here, would you be the same person? In a sense, yes, but you would have still grown. Anyways, I sometimes feel like it just gets so like, kind of like, swept under the rug, you know, just like, well, there's that. But I feel like it's so much more than that. And people really just don't understand until they have to understand, until they don't have a choice. That's the thing about grief, though, is like, you really, truly, you know, you can show all the compassion and try to be as understanding as you possibly can be. But until you are experiencing it, you just really have no idea. And, you know, that's not, it's not like everybody needs to be experiencing it. It's just what it is. And my journey in the beginning of grief was like, gosh, I was doing it all wrong. You know, I mean, not all wrong, but I didn't know how to cope. Okay. My coping mechanism when I was a teenager was drinking and more drinking and making more poor decisions that came with the amount of drinking that I did. So, having a baby kind of, you know, threw me through a loop, and not having really a lot of support was like, okay, well, I can choose to be the POS mom who drinks all the time and just neglects her tiny little baby, or I don't. And I'm not saying like right away, I just looked at my son and was like, oh, I'm never gonna drink because, you know, I gotta take care of you. I did not drink because of breastfeeding. I did not drink until he was like, I think I had one drink one time, like a sip of a drink when he was about 6 months old. And then I didn't have any more really until, I mean, I guess I had a few, but not like when he hit 10 months old is when I really started to try to cope by drinking again. I found support. I found my mom and my dad would, you know, watch him, basically listen to his monitor, and I would go out with my friends. And the thing was, is that I was so volatile and crazy. Not like, like I would just, you know, be out at the bar and like these people are all having a good time and I'm like, the whole bar knows my husband died. You know, I'm buying random people drinks so they'll drink with me so they don't have to feel like I'm so alone. I'm picking fights with, you know, my best friend, and I'm a complete mess, and, you know, I'm crying in the parking lot, and I'm too intoxicated to drive, you know, and it was just a nightmare. But a very quickly ended nightmare. Because it was very apparent, you know, it only takes, well, I'll say this. It took the really bad hangover where I couldn't take care of my son. I felt like the worst mom in the world because I had to have him be with my parents for the day because I was so hungover that I couldn't handle it. And then that was the night that I realized, like, or, well, not the night, but, you know, that day, that hangover day. And then it took 3 days for me to feel totally normal again. But I was able to take care of him, you know, put him to bed, everything that night. And then I was not at my best, but I was mom again. But, you know, it took me 3 days to get back to feeling okay. And I was like, there's no way I'm doing this to my kid. Like, I am not going to have, I'm not going to do the, you know, the humiliating walk of, can you please watch him because I'm a wreck and I drank too much. Like, God, that is not the way I wanted him to grow up. Like, hey, my dad's dead and my mom's a raging alcoholic. No, that is not his story. That doesn't, I'm not letting that be his story. But if that is how you coped, or maybe that's how you're coping, I'm not judging you for it at all. So please don't think I am. I am just simply saying for me, I am grateful that I realized so quickly that that could not be how I carried the grief. I couldn't do it that way. I wanted to so badly. And now, I'll tell you this. It's been 5.5 years since I lost my late husband. And I barely ever touch alcohol. Barely ever. Rare occasion. Probably once every 3 months, maybe. And that's not a full drink. That's usually half drink, except for those, you know, those Fresca vodka mixer thingies. I don't know. They look like a White Claw. Ugh, those things are evil and good. I will drink one whole one of those. But other than that, then that's my one drink every 3 months, rare occasion. I've had a pack of four and there's still 3 out of 4. And the last one I had was weeks ago. Maybe even a month ago, you know, and I don't foresee any time where I'm going to be grabbing another one because I just don't care to. I would much rather be present with my kids. And I hate saying it like this because I just never know what day could be my last day with them. I truly don't believe that it will be anytime soon, but it scares me. And the last thing that I need them to remember is that mom or bonus mom drank. Or was drinking a lot. They just, that's not the version of me I want them to remember. You know, and then there's like the whole, you know, eating too much, eating not enough, neglecting yourself that way. There's the going through like this whole crisis of who you are because now it's just shifted. You know, and the idea of being the person that you were, dressing that way or doing all those things, like, some people find so much comfort in that. And for me, there was a point where I was like, I need to get rid of everything. I can't be her anymore. Her is dead too. That's how I felt about who I was, you know, with my husband. And maybe that sounds crazy because, you know, I shouldn't have been any different. But it was. You are. There's a specific person that you get to be within every relationship that you have. And when the other part of that relationship, the other person is no longer there, no longer available, you don't just lose that person, you lose that part of yourself because that part of yourself doesn't exist anymore. The only reason it existed was because of that person. And then you have to cope with not just grieving that person, but now you're grieving a part of yourself that you know no longer can exist, can function, can be a part of who you are. So it's a double whammy. You just have to let go of this other part of you. It's not even like a choice. It's just how it has to be. And you know, a lot of my coping mechanisms for loss were like, okay, dye your hair. Like physical changes, anything that could change physically. It was, you know, hair, cut it off, grow it out, put extensions in, dye crazy colors, wear crazy outfits, get rid of all the clothes I used to wear, refuse to drive my car that I, you know, I loved my, I had a cop car, my dad had a cop car. Cop cars were kind of like a thing in our family. And that's not weird or abnormal. People feel like they need to, like, get rid of those things, you know. That's why some people are immediately, like, moving. They want to move to a different state, or they want to move out of where they lived, or they want to get rid of their car that they have and get a new car, and they definitely want to get rid of their spouse's car immediately. And, you know, that's another thing. Like, once I finally got my husband's car out of the impound from the situation, you know, from the situation, he, I don't know, I said he, but, like, I now I had this second cop car, and it was significant. It was my dad's car, and then it was my uncle's car, and then my uncle, you know, he gave it. It was supposed to be a wedding gift, but really it was a gift to my late husband, Curtis. So, he gave him that on, you know, for the wedding. And, so it was like a big deal to him. And I could not even look at that car because that car was there when he died. And we had to park it, you know, we parked it behind the shop at our house, so I couldn't see it all the time. We put a cover over it, and then it was just like, it was just gonna go to crap. And then I was able to let my stepdaughter, Curtis, my late husband's daughter, her mom was able to use it for a while because she needed something. And so I was able to kind of like give that, that help. And then she returned it when she was done, you know. And then I finally got it back. And when I got it back, I was like, man, I really just don't want to look at this anymore. And also, I feel like I just, like, there was this overwhelming feeling that I needed to give it to Curtis's best friend. And so I did. I gifted it to him. And he still has it. And he still drives it. And he has used it back and forth to go to work. And I am so incredibly grateful that he has it, because it's getting used, because it's the exact person. It's the perfect person to have it. There couldn't be a better person for it. And I think that the connection that he gets to feel, which we've never talked about, but I'm sure if you're driving your best friend's car is no longer there. I mean, I'm sure it's gotta feel different being able to drive it. I'm super grateful for that. Like, you know, but I had to get rid of it. And then when my dad passed, like, I did not want to drive my cop car anymore. I had to get rid of it. Yeah. So, sorry, we just paused for a second and I totally just went, wah. I was just thinking, like, you know, there's just so many different parts of the process of accepting what happened and what grieving looks like and what coping looks like. And I finally, like, I didn't pick up books about grief, and I don't know why, but I had this, like, thing against it. Like, I just could not do it. Which blew my mind. But, like, I still think about it. Because every time I try to pick up a book, I've bought books about grief. Or I've bought stories about, you know, like, other people's journey through grief. And, like, I follow women who have gone through grief and lost their husbands. And you know, like, in recovery. And people who have lost their family from addiction and stuff like that. But, like, I can't pick a book up and I can't click start on Audible and play a book specifically about grief, loss. I just can't. But my brain works wildly, like my father's in certain ways. Like my mom's also. We'll say when I got her memory, which is not the best, guys. and she knows that, so it's not, I'm not being rude, but, like, and even if I was being rude, honestly, it's the truth. Like, she remembers some things, but not everything, and I'm very much the same. My dad could remember everything, man. He could remember all. And my brother's the same way and drives me nuts. I'm a little jealous of that, you know, trait. Like, why did he get it? But it's fine. But you know what I did pick up? I picked up books about self-help, self-improvement, self-empowerment. And then I also, at the same time, after I read some self-improvement books and how to change my mindset, I started picking up mindset shifts for making money. And I know that that probably sounds absolutely insane, but you have to know that I had no idea what I was going to do. I didn't have the business that I was supposed to have anymore. My parents were entrepreneurs. We were going to be entrepreneurs. And then, boom, life happened and I had no idea what I was doing. And all I knew is that I could not, I went back to work. It didn't work for me to go to work. So you guys know, it just doesn't. It didn't work. It was worse. I tried. I went back. I don't even think for a whole year. I think I went back for like 4 or 5 months. And then I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't do it. And I knew that I could be at home with my son because there was some financial stability happening outside of, not from anyone else, from actually, not that it matters. I just had financial stability. Okay? That's just where it was. So I didn't have to go to work. I could just be with my son, which is what I needed. Yeah. But, you know, like, some people need that. That's another thing. Like, the job you once had, you find no desire to do anymore. No connection. No empowering feeling. And you need to change it. And that's okay. The desire to all of a sudden make a shitload of money. Totally okay. Actually somewhat normal. The desire to totally live a completely different lifestyle. Sell everything, live in an RV, and travel the world. Completely freaking normal, okay? What's not normal is the amount of people that judge you for these situations or judge you for these big life changes when they have absolutely no idea what's actually going on. At all. Like, they just don't understand, like, where you're at. And I couldn't move, but, like, I'll tell you this, when my late husband died, I bought a one-way ticket to California, and I grabbed me and my tiny little baby, and we got on a plane, and I was able to go stay with my best friend, and that literally, well, one of my best friends, and that literally saved my life, guys. Like, that helped me grieve and move through things in a space where it was safe to, and out of a very toxic space. And I don't mean that, I'm going to stop saying this because it doesn't matter. I'm going to say, and I don't mean that really. I don't give a fuck how it sounds. The truth is that it was so toxic inside my household. My brother was not okay. He was struggling. He watched my late husband die. You know, my dad was like losing his mind over my late husband being dead. My mom was trying to like, she was losing her mind, trying to keep us all together. You know, my brother's girlfriend, now wife, was just like, she was there for all of it. She lived with us. It was just like a whole scenario, guys. And it was very toxic. And then there was other, like, my brother's friends lived there, and they were close to my late husband. And I felt like I couldn't fucking breathe. And everywhere I looked and everyone I talked to was a reminder that he was dead, and I just needed the fuck out. And so I left. And if that's something that like comes up, if that's something that you need, or you're still feeling like this anxiousness, they always say, don't make a lot of big decisions in the first year of grief. I don't fucking agree with that. I don't agree with it at all. I don't really give a shit what anybody says, but if you feel the desire and the need inside your body, and your body is literally physically fucking telling you, because there will be signs that it's telling you, you need to do something different, or you need to change this, or you need to leave, or whatever it is, you need to do it.
it might not be forever. It might not work out, but it doesn't really fucking matter because you need to figure out how to move and live with that grief. And it might be in a different space, in a different area, in a different job, in a different fucking atmosphere than you were currently in. And that is okay. And that is fucking normal. I wish that people would stop trying to make it sound like you're just being so irrational because you're fucking not. And they don't get it. They just don't. It's okay to cope however the fuck you want to cope. It's okay to do whatever you want to do to make it through this situation. It's not anybody's business.
I'm sorry. I stepped away from the mic, so I probably sound a little funny for a second.
But here's the situation. Sorry. I realized that I wasn't video recording, so... sorry for everybody who likes to watch this on YouTube. It's not, we're going to be just getting the end, I believe. So there's that. So anyways, whatever coping mechanism that you need to use it. You know what I did? I took money that I had gotten from different, once again, I took my money, doesn't fucking matter where it came from, and I tried to invest it into things so that I could learn and I could build a business, and I fucking failed. And I don't even know if I would consider right now me winning, but I will consider it me not losing and me getting somewhere further than where I was. But like, you know, that's the other thing is like, I made big ass decisions. I bought, oh my gosh. You know, like I bought a course to learn how to do, I bought these courses and all this stuff. And I've spent a lot of money, probably $7,000 at least in courses and things to learn, education, to learn how to build something out of everything that I went through. And that's how I put it, because that's really the truth, is that I was trying to find something to help me navigate how to get to the masses about everything that I've gone through. And not because I need you guys to hear my story so you can pity me, but so that you can know that you're not fucking alone and that I can talk to you about these things that I felt were so not normalized. They were not, there's so much about addiction and being the child of an addict that people are like, it wasn't your story. Fuck you. It was my story. It is my story. And you don't get to tell me any different, you know, or, my husband and the way he died, people have really cruel ways of what they said and what they think about the situation. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I wasn't there. You weren't fucking there. Nobody really knows besides the three people that were. And the two that are still here and living, from the conversations I've had with them, you know, I know that, I know what my truth is about that situation, but there's just so much bullshit about what grief should look like, what part of the story you should get to share. And I want to change the record on that. I want to change the understanding of what grief looks like. I want to change, you know, and give perspective on what it's like to be the daughter of an addict who wasn't a piece of shit. You know that? He wasn't. He was a meth addict, and he also was a phenomenal fucking human. Was he totally a douche to me and my family sometimes? Absolutely. I'm never going to steer it any other way. I'm never going to say like, oh my God, he was just like the greatest man ever. He was a wonderful fucking human being, but he was also a mighty douche. Okay. But he did big shit, and his addiction wasn't just the only thing about him. And you know, there were so many people that had no idea that he even had an addiction problem until he passed. No, there. I mean, my dad was a guy who could sit with, you know, some of the bigwigs in our small town, but guys that had lots and lots of money, and he would sit and he would play poker with them, and he was invited to do things at a different level than most people around us were, you know, and he was able to do that and have those kind of relationships on top of struggling with his addiction. So I just, sometimes I feel like it needs to just be like reiterated that there's so many, you know, sides to the coin, and it's not just two sides, and it's okay to talk about these things, and it's okay for the normal thing to not be what everybody has decided, that society has decided it's going to be, which still goes into the whole coping thing. Like, you don't have to cope in any way, that because you don't have to do, oh, okay, well, like, steps one through, I don't even know how many steps of grief there are. I don't give a shit. That's the truth. I don't care. Don't tell me, you know, you are in denial. I don't give a fuck. Shut up. Cool. I'm in denial. Like, please don't try to label where I'm at in my grief processing. That's just, like, such an ick feeling to me. Shut up. You don't know. You literally don't have any idea. So go ahead and tell me what you want. You can write down in your little book how you think that I'm behaving. I don't care. This is my life. This is my life. This is how I have to process it. I have, my entire being has to function inside of this new chapter where I'm missing people that were supposed to be here in my head. Okay. Anyways, I'm pivoting back to, like, me buying the courses and doing all this stuff because I wanted to share, like, you know, everybody grieves differently. Like, I was like, you know what? It's going to make my dad so proud. Like, I'm going to build a business, like a crazy business that he would be like, Tosh, I don't know if this is going to work, but go ahead. Like, cause that's what he always did. And he'd be like, dude, my kid can do anything. Cause I'm a fucking hustler. I literally can't stand it, but you know what? It is what it is. And actually I just got perspective on this today. That's totally different. People say, you know, oh, it must be nice to have mom and dad's money, or I wish that so-and-so would buy, you know, my mom or dad could buy me this, and, like, you can eat a dick on that, because that is not the situation that went down ever in my life, and when it did, like, I don't really care how you think or feel about it, because it's most likely a projection of the fact that you just wish that you could have the same thing happen for you, but you didn't, and I don't mean that rudely, I just mean, like, hop off my shit with trying to judge me because my parents worked their fucking ass off to be able to help me with one thing in my life. Okay. And that's not even the scenario. The scenario is that I learned how to hustle from my parents. I learned how to always make fucking ends meet and more. Like, there is no end game for me. Okay. When you think that you will out hustle me, think again, because it will never happen. It won't. I have the endurance to outlast almost anybody that could possibly think they could outlast me. And I don't, once again, mean that really. That's where I found my saving grace in my grief, is the endurance that I have to hustle and to make something out of all of this shitty shit. So if, like, you turn around and you were just like, you know what, I'm going to take this situation and I'm going to broadcast it. And this is the other thing. Like, people are like, oh, gross. Ew, you put your family on blast for views and you put your dad on blast for money. And I just, first of all, don't give a shit. Because what, my dad would be hella proud of me for putting him on blast for some views and some money. You don't even understand what kind of fucking hustlers we were. One. Two, I would never intentionally blast my dad to get a fucking dime. Y'all are crazy for thinking that. But I will bring awareness and I will talk about the shitty things. And that's what makes people uncomfortable, is that I'm willing to talk about those shitty things because they need to be talked about, because there's a bunch of us in the world who are hurting and need to know that we're not alone and need to know that this is normal and need to know that it's okay. No matter how the fuck you do it, you can just cope. And I chose to cope by hustling and by building a brand out of myself and by sharing my story, by building a brand out of myself, by building a brand out of the shit that happened to me. And if that's what you choose to do, like, all the fucking power to you. And I hope that I get to see it and that I get to witness it. And maybe one day I get to be a part of it, or that we can collab together, or maybe that's not the way that you want to do it and you want to simplify your life, like, it is fucking so okay to do it however you want to do it. But the idea that you have to do it one way or you have to go through all of these different steps and the stages of grief is bullshit. It's not the only way. Just because somebody wrote some shit down in a book and they have doctor in front of their fucking name doesn't mean that that's the permanent, cemented fucking only way. It's just not. I'm sorry. It's not. You can argue with me all day. I don't really care. I won't argue with you because I just don't give a shit. Like, you will never change my mind. Sorry, I so hope, like, that y'all don't feel like I rant sometimes, but I just feel so passionate about these topics. Like, I just wish that people could truly, I just want to reach out and grab every single person that is hurting from the loss or the waiting of the loss. Like, they're waiting for the loss to happen, you know, like, from addiction or whatever it is that they're struggling with. And I just want to, like, put all of my thoughts and all of these, like, how I've coped and moved into new things and all of the information I've gotten from all of these books and these podcasts and all of these different spaces that I've just been open-minded to listening to, and give it to them and give it to everybody so that maybe you can grow bigger than the bigness of the grief. Because a grief, the size of it never changes, but you can grow stronger and bigger around it and know how to cope with it better. And that's truly what I'm coming here to do, is to lead the way in how you can move forward and how you can cope. And for the good days, the shitty days, the in-between days, I'm here for all of it. Okay. And that's the purpose. That's the point. Is that we're moving through things. So this podcast is sometimes going to be about, you know, the heaviness of grief. Sometimes the podcast is going to be about how my grief took me on this wild adventure of building a brand and building a business and what that looks like and how I got there. Because it's all fucking relevant. Okay. Because it would be pretty boring and it'd be a really lame podcast if I just sat and I repeated myself over and over. And in a sense, I probably will repeat myself over and over, but in very different aspects of everything. I just want you guys to know that I have big aspirations for this, and I want there to be a vibe and a tone and a way you feel when you sit down or you are working out or you are driving the car and you're listening to me talk. I want there to be like this. I'm so fucking ready for this podcast because it's going to give me exactly what I need. And that's, like, the whole goal is to give people what they need. So, I mean, in a sense, I feel like I totally talked about coping. But then at the same time, I feel like I didn't. So I'm sorry if you feel like I missed the mark on that, but I feel like I kind of hit, like, a good spot, to leave off for this one. And I just, like, really want you guys to know that no matter if this is the only thing you take away from today's podcast, is that you take away that it doesn't fucking matter how you grieve, how you cope. I mean, please don't go and use, obviously there's things, like, I don't want you guys out there just, like, coping by using drugs, and I don't want you coping by drinking an astronomical amount or, you know, anything else that's self-harming or non-productive. But if that's a space that you were in or that you're kind of in or that you're stuck in, like, it's okay. I'm here to tell you that you can get out of it. You have to be willing, but you can. But it's also okay to just be right there, right fucking now. Okay. It's also okay to make big ass changes. And it's also okay for nobody. You don't need to ask permission. Just because somebody in your life dies doesn't mean all of a sudden you need to ask everybody else for fucking permission to continue to live your life or make big ass changes. Okay. If you feel like you want the opinion of somebody else, then that's totally okay. But if you don't and you're tired of hearing it, don't let it stop you. Don't let people build up some crazy ass fear, because you're already going to have fear. You're already going to have anxiety. You're already going to have this depression inside of you from the loss that you have. Don't let anybody scare you out of living your fucking life, even if it means you're going to make a big ass change. Okay? That's the point of this podcast today. Don't be scared to make the big changes, even if you have heavy shit that is happening or that you feel like might happen. You have to make the decisions that work for you, and they don't have to make sense to anybody else. Okay. I love you guys so much. I love sharing with you guys. I love vibing. I love talking. God, it's so like, ugh. I just wish that like I could do it. One day we will do it where it's in person and I can stand on stage and talk to everybody, and then I can, at the end of it, I'll just go down and then we can, 1,000 people can hug me if they want to, and then we can hang, you know. But that's like, that's the goal, that's the dream. Yeah. Okay. So if you don't know where to hang out and find me, now you do, because I'm about to tell you, you need to come over, hook up with your girl. I am on most of the social medias. I'm actually even working on getting back on, I think they call it X now, but it was Twitter, and I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to get to the point of calling it X, because that feels really weird, so I'll probably keep calling it Twitter. I'm working on that right now so that we can start tweeting. Okay, but for real, Facebook, I am Natasha Lynn. On Instagram, I'm Natasha Lynn _official. On TikTok, she's the Phoenix Podcast. I'm pretty sure you can still look me up as Natasha Lynn and it should pull up for you also. YouTube is She's the Phoenix Podcast. I haven't been the best about doing my like shorts and connecting a lot on YouTube. And unfortunately, this week will not be on YouTube, because yeah, technical difficulties with my freaking recording device, but whatever. We will still be, you know, on the podcast, so that's what matters. Okay. I love you guys. Ride your wave, ride it with all the sassiness and force and whatever you need to get through the space that you're in. Coping is fucking coping, okay? And there is no wrong way to do it. I mean, there is. You know what I mean. But big changes are not the wrong thing necessarily, okay? Make the decisions that feel best to you. And fuck what everybody else says. Also, fuck the fear, okay? Just do it. I love you guys. I hope that we get to chit-chat again soon. Laughing because this always goes longer than I say it's going to. I always say, oh yeah, I'm going to do a short one. This podcast will only be like 30 minutes. And here we are at 47. Anyways, I love you guys so much. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. If you know somebody that needs to hear this, please share it. Please rate or review the podcast. It really helps me. It helps you. It helps people hear about me. Please share the podcast with anybody maybe that you know needs to hear the message. Yeah, and connect with me. Guys, connect with me. Tell me your stories. Shoot me a message. I love hearing them. I love connecting. Okay, I'm going to stop talking your ear off. Love you guys. Bye.